Velkommen til Radio Shalom. Dagens program indeholder følgende. Først optagelse fra Kerner Yesod Danmark, arrangement i synagogen den 17. september 2025. Om behovet for terrorofrefondens arbejde i Israel og i hele verden. Med foredrag af Yael Raz og Talia Sapir. Men først hilsen fra den nye Israels ambassadør, Tzvi Tal. Til sidst fortæller Miriam om blomsterfestivalen i Tivoli. Så velkommen til Radio Shalom. Mit navn er Abraham Kopenhagen.
Så vil jeg gerne byde velkommen
til Miriam og Kassi på
Gud. Jeg er så til vej. Jeg er rigtig glad for at se jer. Og jeg som har ret lyst til at skifte over til engelsk. So on behalf of Keren Aysot, I would like to very warmly welcome all of you. We're happy to see all of you here. As you noticed, we have a special guest with us today, the new Israeli ambassador to Denmark, His Excellency Host Ambassador Tal. Lige om lidt, så giver jeg ordet til ambassadøren, som vil komme med meget kort hilsen. Derefter så kommer Talia Sapir fra Knesset Jerusalem, for at fortælle lidt, hvem vi er. Efterfulgt af Yael Raz, hovedtaler, som også tager nogle spørgsmål, jeg fortæller om. Så igen, velkommen til, det er godt at se jer. And with that in mind, Your Excellency, Mr. Ambassador, I would like to give the floor.
Good evening, Erev Tov. First of all, I subscribe to each and every word you said, Peter, although I didn't understand the word. But on a serious note, Talia, El, I'm really thrilled to be here this evening. It's not my first event in the community, it's my second. But it's a very meaningful one. Because all along my career, and I'm nearing the end, I've always had a very strong relations with the representatives of Keren Aysot and the Jewish Agency wherever I served, be it in Brussels, in Paris, in Rome, and just before coming to Denmark, my last posting was as ambassador in Mexico. So I'm sure we'll be able to duplicate the wonderful collaborations we had, I had with you in the past. The challenges are diversifying many. I was born in Belgium, and the slogan is L'union fait la force. Unity makes power, or the force, if you are an avid fan of the Star Wars and all these science fiction movies. So I'm really a great believer in joining forces, and I'm very appreciative of what the Jewish Agency and Keren Aysot are doing. It's so vast and so creative and so up to date when it comes to the needs of the Israeli population. So thank you for your support. Thank you for coming this evening. And I think I'll stop here because I'm not the star of the evening. The ladies are. So thank you and Shana Tova to all.
Thank you.
good evening. This is very exciting. It's exciting to me. This is the first time ever I'm talking in a synagogue. And to do it in Denmark, it's unique. So thank you for this opportunity. Thank you, Peter and Ole, for... Can you hear me? Okay, I'll do my best that it will be, because I don't talk loud. I'll try. Is it better now? Yes? Okay, so thank you for having us here, me and Yael from Keren Hayesod, Israel, and from the Jewish Agency from Israel. This is a very exciting and moving thing for us to be here in this venture. To stand along with Israel at this time is a very, very special thing, in my opinion. Israel is isolated. The Jewish people of the community feel alone, feel that they are not heard. People maybe have to hide their identity. You hear the news every day and you hear the media in Denmark, and it's not so easy to be a Jew today in the world and also in Denmark. As an Israeli, I never had to hide my identity. People would ask me where I'm from, I would say I'm from Israel. But I had two incidents that made me understand what you are all feeling. Once I was in Sweden, not too long ago, I ordered a taxi in Uber, and you know in Uber you have your name on the taxi. So my name is Talia Sapir, and it's an Israeli name. And the guy was, I don't know where from, but of course he was Muslim, and he started cursing me very, very harsh in Arabic the whole way. And in the middle of the way, I started to feel that I'm threatened, that either we have an emergency button that the Jewish Agency gives us, so either I will press this button, that's called the octopus, or I'll just ask him to stop, to get off. I asked him, and he surprisingly let me off. I didn't have to call the emergency. And then I had to change my name for the first time ever. I changed my Uber name, so whenever I order a taxi, most of the taxis drivers don't like us very much, so now I don't have an Israeli name on Uber, and I had to hide my identity, and this is very difficult. The second time was a week ago. I was in a vacation in Porto with my daughter, and a car ran me over. Not by purpose, not because I'm Jewish, not because I'm Israeli, because she pressed the gas instead of the brakes, and she made a mistake, and she not because she's a woman, but she did run me over. It was very slow. Fortunately, nothing serious happened, but I did fall back. And a lot of people gathered around me. And these two really wonderful, red-headed Irish girls came up to me, 34, 50, 40 years old, and told me to sit next to them until the ambulance is coming. There was a coffee shop next by, and I was sitting with them. And I was a little bit out of it. So they started asking me questions to focus me. How long have you been in Portugal? What is your job? Blah, blah. And in the end, they asked me where I'm from. And they were normal girls. And I said I was from Israel. The moment I said that I was from Israel, they looked at each other, got up, and left. And this was personal, because this is not an event of Keren Hayesod with me and Ole in Faroe Islands and we have a demonstration against us. Or it was personal. I was a person who was hurt, and they felt it's okay just to leave me like this in the street and go. And they didn't wait with the ambulance with me, and I was really offended. And I'm thinking now, I'm not feeling this every day. I live in Israel. But what about you guys? This is very, very difficult situation for the Jewish people in the diaspora, and I feel for you very much. So if you're feeling alone, talk to each other about it. Open it up. Don't stay alone with these harsh feelings, because I know, and I met a lot of people that are saying to me that they feel alone, that they feel that they are isolated, that their Christian or non-Jewish friends are not talking to them or not talking to them about the elephant in the room. So talk to each other. I think it's, you can make each other stronger. So I think it's important. We, the Jewish people, have values. We believe in justice, in dignity, in mercy, to have each other's back. We love our neighbors like we love our own, ourselves. And these values have been turned upside down. And the world is going crazy. Because right is wrong, and wrong is right, and a lie is truth, and the truth is a lie. And this is the situation that we are living in the world. But also in Israel, the situation is very difficult. Because we have been fighting in 7 fronts in the last 2 years. We have missiles, terror attacks, soldiers in the army, mandatory soldiers, 18-year-old kids that are serving in the army for 2 years, and think what happens to a family when their child, their 18-year-old boy or girl, are in Gaza for 2 years. How afraid are they for their safety? They don't sleep at night. There are mothers that don't sleep at night just to hear about what's happening to their son. When a soldier goes into Gaza, usually they leave the telephone in Israel so they won't be detected. They're not allowed to use their phone. So the mothers don't know what's happening with their kids until they're back in Israel. So this is a very difficult situation. And what happens to these young people, to these young souls that are fighting in such a harsh war? They see their friends killed. They see their friends wounded. They see the enemy wounded. They see children die. What does it do to your soul as an 18-year-old? And I will not take Yael's place, but she will talk about the mental toll that it takes on our young soldiers. And we have also reserve duty soldiers. It means that people already, after the age of 21, they've been to the army for 400 days, 500 days, people with families, with kids, with businesses, with jobs. The businesses are shattered. Some of them are getting fired. Families are falling apart. This is a really hard arena in the Israeli society. We also been struggling with Aliyah, the new immigrants to Israel. Last year, still on the euphoria of the beginning of the war, and people were really happy to come to Israel and fight, we had 30,000 new immigrants last year, which is amazing in a wartime. Now, up till now, 12,000. Was it the PR that we're not doing? Is it their parents who are not letting them come? I don't know. But it is the future of Israel to have young people and families come to live in Israel, and this is one of our goals. And we are trying to figure out how to change the narrative and change the situation. The economic situation in Israel is challenging. A war, 2 years war, costs a lot of money. The prices are very high. Take into account that a family of minimum wage in Israel is around 6,000 shekels, which means 12,000 corona, about. A family of five have to buy in the supermarket. It will cost around 3,000 corona a week. So this is very hard. So all the prices are going up, and we are one of the most expensive countries in the world, and we don't earn like you earn here. We earn much less. So this is also a toll on our society. And if it's not enough, I'm going to be optimistic in a minute. If that's not enough, the political situation in Israel is dividing. Some of the people think, and 82% of the people think we should stop the war, bring the hostages back, and start to heal. And the rest of the people think that we should conquer Gaza, deport the Palestinians, and build Israel or America or whatever in the Gaza area. And in between, there is many, many opinions also, and this is something that tears up families. This is people are arguing about it, are very emotional about it, friends not talking to friends. At work, you have you cannot really speak about your political views. This is really, really difficult. And the hostages' family even can be called the betrayers or bugdim. Traitors. So it is unthinkable that some people in the Israeli society will call the families of the hostages traitors because of they want their brothers and their children or their brother or their soldiers or their sons to come back home. And Israel is also isolated. As you probably know, not only the anti-Semitism or the anti-Israelism or the anti-Zionism, Israel is an isolated country today. We are facing maybe sanctions. So if the political situation is very hard, this will make it even harder, the economic situation in Israel. But we are here in the name of the civilians. We are here on the name of the people of Israel. And we need that support. What we're doing is, Keren HaYesod has been doing for the last 2 years, is addressing emergency situation in Israel. One of them you will hear today from Yael, the Keren, the Victims of Terror Fund. And others will be our shelters, mobile shelters. We are building shelters all over Israel and giving Israelis an opportunity to shield themselves from rockets. Some areas were not sheltered. So we have a lot of places that there is a bus stop. We put up a shelter next to a bus stop so when people will be waiting for the bus and if there is a missile attack, they could come and go and hide in the shelters. This is a huge operation that we did in the last 2 years. We are trying to rehabilitate communities that has been shattered on the 7th of October. We are taking care of 10 communities, kibbutzim and moshavim, in the south of Israel. We owe around 10 million. We are committed to $10 million for these communities. And it's a huge toll and it's a huge challenge that we are taking on. We are helping small businesses that has been shattered. We are helping widows, orphans. We are helping elderly, Holocaust survivors. We are building shelters in Holocaust survivors' buildings so they won't have to go down the elevator that we will have in every floor shelter because elderly, it's very difficult for them to go down. And you cannot go down in a minute and a half in an elevator, 10 floors. So in every floor, in all buildings that they don't have a shelter, we are building a shelter in the floors. So this is something that is very, very important to us. We are doing also a lot of new programs for new immigrants to bring them to Israel, to attract young people to come, vocational training programs within their original states so they can come and already with something in their hands so they will have a job when they come to Israel. We have not so little absorption center for young people. I think about seven absorption center all around Israel for young people. So they would come and they will be with each other and then they will live to their life in Israel. There will be already a small family. So this is a lot of things that we are doing and we still have to do the regular things to continue helping with education, youth villages, children at risk, everything that we did before the war, we still have to do. So with that in mind, I want you to think that all of you together are a force. All of you together can make a difference and can impact people's life with maybe a little donation. But if all of you as a force come together, we can give a grant to a terror victim. We can help build a mobile shelter in Sderot or in one of the kibbutzim in the Negev. All of us together, and all of us together with other communities around the world, are a force to make a difference and to impact on people's life. So thank you very much. Thank you. And I want to invite a good friend of mine. She is compassionate, passionate about what she does. Very talented woman. Yael Raz is the head of the Terror Victim Fund of Israel, of the Jewish Agency. Please.
Good evening. I have a presentation set. So my name is Yael, and I fell in love with the Jewish community in Copenhagen 5 years ago. It was COVID, and we were trying to communicate with different communities around the world and offer some support. One of the first people I've met was Johan, your security officer, and then Tina, and we started to communicate and support and offer all sorts of best practices that Israel had to share back then. This is my first time in Copenhagen, but if you'll talk with my colleagues at the Jewish Agency, I'm the crazy lady that likes the Nordics. This is my name in the corridors. So I'm so happy to be here. But today I want to share the story of the Fund for the Victims of Terror. I've been working for the Jewish Agency for the past 22 years. The past 14 years, I'm the director of the Resilience and Emergency Department of the Jewish Agency. Part of my work is abroad, working with Jewish communities, and part of it is being the director of the Fund for the Victims of Terror. I'm also a PhD candidate in Tel Aviv University. Surprisingly enough, my research has to do with resilience of Jewish communities. So before we'll dive in to the work that we've done with the Fund for Victims of Terror, let's talk a bit about resilience. And while we will talk today about trauma, we will also talk about hope. So research, you know, in the past 2 years allows us to measure and predict the level of community resilience. And we have five main predictors that support this. And I want to share them with you and to see afterwards how it met us on October 7th. So first of all, as community members, we would all like to look up to our leadership. We want to be able to trust our leaders. We want to be able to be proud of the leadership of our community. And this is one of the main predictors of resilient communities, the level of trust of the community members within their leadership. We also want to have resilient individuals in our communities, people who know what to do in times of emergency, people who can regulate their stress, and of course, resilient members of our community will impact the entire community. We know that the sense of belonging of people to their community, sometimes to the land, sometimes to the municipality, is one of the main predictors of community resilience. People who are passionate about working for their community, people who are passionate to come and be part of the services, of the parties and so forth. So the sense of belonging would be among the main predictors. But the number one predictor that research shows is hope. The level of hope of the members of the community will be the number one predictor if we'll have a resilient community. Now let's see these predictors and how they met us in Israel on October 7th. So remember that we want strong leaders and we want to trust them. And now I will share the story of Nir Oz that many of you actually met or heard about. Nir Oz, a community of 400 individuals just across the border from the Gaza Strip, was the first community to be attacked by Hamas terrorists. No one single shot was heard in Niroz other than the terrorists. No one came to support the residents of Niroz. They were left alone, and the terrorists went in, did the most horrible and horrific acts. 1/4 of the community of Niroz was either shot dead or taken to Gaza. Now talk about trust and talk about leadership, and now imagine the residents and the members of the community of Niroz. No trust, no trust in leadership, and this is something that reflects many other communities. We are talking about the sense of belonging to a community, and we want to be belonged, but 200,000 Israelis were in fact evacuated from their home, most of them to different hotels. Now try to manage a community when the member of the community are divided sometimes to more than 100 hotels. We ruined the fabric of the communities by evacuating them and send them to different hotels. Try to imagine parents with young kids living in a hotel room, a very small one, for a year and a half. This cannot reflect resilience. This is what happened on October 7th. 1,187 Israelis died that morning, were murdered, either in the Nova Festival, in the kibbutzim, in Sderot, and elsewhere. And we all know the 251 Israelis were taken to Gaza. I think that the only family in Israel that knew what is going to happen to the families that morning was my own family, since my husband Eyal is the first cousin of Gilad Shalit. We were there to fight on the release of Gilad for 5.5 years, and when the rumors of hostages started at around 11 in the morning, Eyal and I looked at each other and said, everything all over again. This is a very grim picture. But what happened also on October 7th is that thousands and thousands of Israelis stood up, went out of their home asking, what can I do for other people? The level of mobilization of the Israeli society after October 7th is unheard of. And this is resilience. And this is what will help us to overcome this complex situation. Israel now is facing huge challenges. Almost 19,000 soldiers are severely handicapped. Now imagine my kids, 11 and 14, when they will go out of their home in the near future, they will see more and more handicapped people. We'll have to be a more embracing society. This is something that will change the next decade. Some 10,000 soldiers were already recognized with PTSD. I would never write it in a presentation, but we are now counting 20 police officers and soldiers that committed suicide. This is the toll of PTSD. I'm working closely with families, bereaved parents, and we see that unfortunately, on a daily basis. Thousands of Israelis are still evacuated from their home in hotels or elsewhere, and this is again something that we need to take into account. We will need to support the individuals who will take them time to go back to their communities. Not everyone could do this immediately, and we will need to be tolerated in order to support them. Now, when you are talking about the Israeli civilians, some 3 million Israelis already reported that they have PTSD symptoms. This is our teachers, our kids, the lady on the supermarket. My next door neighbor just returned from 300 days in Gaza, and we are building a second floor. Most of the constructor people speaks Arabic. And I was terrified by the fact that he will go out after being diagnosed with PTSD and will hear Arabic all day long. We need to be very, very sensitive. 80,000 Israelis were already recognized by the government as victims of terror. We need to support each and every one of them. tens of thousands were not recognized yet, but we know that we will have to support them in the future. So what can we do? What can we do as a society? What can we do as the Jewish people in order to support Israel in this time? Thanks to our brothers and sisters and the Jewish community around the world, on October 7th, we had a platform to support victims of terror in Israel, the Fund for the Victims of Terror of the Jewish Agency. We've been working since the second Intifada, and you can see the different escalation throughout the years that prepared us, unfortunately or fortunately enough, to October 7th. On October 7th, we were a team of three, and in 22 years, we have supported 9,000 families. That was until October 7th. We did three main things to victims of terror in Israel. First, when any family would be impacted by a terror act, we will be there in 48 hours. We'll bring them financial support, but this is not the reason why we are coming so closely. We are telling them two things. You are not alone, and we are here on behalf of our brothers and sisters around the world. Now, you know us Israelis, we tend to be very macho, and sometimes I'm standing in front of very, very, you know, macho guys, and I'm saying that you are not alone, and I'm here on behalf of our brothers and sisters, and people will burst in tears. Someone around the world in their darkest of hours thought about them, and we are only the shlichim. We carry the message. After coming and supporting them in the initial process, they will be eligible for further support. Now, the government of Israel supports victims of terror tremendously, but sometimes governmental bureaucracy, you know, you need to fill a paper, a form, you need to knock on the right door. Sometimes it takes time. Sometimes it's not flexible enough. Anything and everything that will give a victim of terror the freedom to choose what's best for him or her in the rehabilitation process will be eligible as support from the Fund for Victims of Terror. Taking your partner to a theater, just going outside of the home and not staying with a blanket on your head will be considered as rehabilitation. Now, no government can support your concert tickets, but we will do. We will support the therapy and additional therapy and all sorts of activities that will take people outside of their home. We've done so for over 22 years. And the third thing and third layer of support would be supporting kids with PTSD. Until October 7th, we had some 250 kids diagnosed with PTSD that we would welcome for 21 days a year of camps. At Sukkot, Hanukkah, Passover, and the summer, they would come to our camps and feel normal. These kids cannot go to other camps because they are too loud, they are too aggressive, they are too everything. But while they're coming to our camps, everyone is like me. I have a feeling of success. So as I said, until October 7th, we have supported some 9,000 families, and we were a team of three. We realized that very morning that the scaling of the event would be enormous. We never anticipated this would be it. On an average year, we would support some 130 families with immediate grants. From October 7th until now, we have supported 8,700 of them. In 22 years, we have supported 9,000 families with rehabilitation grants. Up until now, 6,500. 250 kids were listed to our camps, already 1,400 from October 7th. But we've realized that this support system is not enough. When you are talking about 80,000 Israelis recognized as victims of terror, we don't have enough therapists in Israel to support this huge amount of people. Not every Israeli who wants and needs to sit in front of a psychologist or a social worker will be eligible or could do so. We just don't have enough therapists. So we've created a fourth layer of support, which is the group therapy. People can come to a group and receive the therapy that they need with other individuals. Until now, we have supported some 6,700 individuals in group therapy. But this is not enough, because we are talking just about the immediate victims. But what about the grandparents? What about the cousins? What about the uncles? The circles of vulnerability after October 7th are enormous, and we know that we need to attend each and every one of them. And through our partners in the Israeli government, we are now creating a new platform, actually created, called Family Circle. The families of the hostages and the bereaved families will receive group therapy in the extended family and not just the immediate victims. We can do it through surfing, we can do it through art therapy, we can do it through creative writing, whatever. Just come, be part of a group, and receive whatever treatment that you need. But behind the number I've just stated, there are real people. And I want to share some of the stories that my team and I were working with at the past few months, almost 2 years. Not many people know that on October 7th, three families perished completely in Israel. The Kedem Simantov family from Kibbutz Nir Oz were found in their safe room. The house was completely burned down. They were shot dead. Tamar, Johnny, and the three kids were found dead. Tamar was a promising leader of the region. She was supposed to be the mayor of Eshkol Regional Council. Now imagine what it does to a community when this promising leader is no longer around. The second family who perished completely was the Kapshiter family. Zhenya and Dina immigrated to Israel from the former Soviet Union. That evening, they were camping with their kids, driving back when the sirens started in the morning. A group of terrorists found them on the way and shot them all dead. No one was left alive. And the third family is the Kutz family from Kibbutz Sha'ar HaNegev. Livnat, Aviv, and the three kids were found in their house in Kfar Aza, hugged and shot dead. Livnat was a very good friend of mine, and that morning when the sirens started and we saw the photos from Kibbutz Kfar Aza, I wasn't brave enough to call her. I was totally afraid that she would not answer. There is no one single Israeli that would not remember the photo of the five bodies that were taken out from the Kutz family house. But even when we're talking about such a tragedy, there is still hope. Livnat was diagnosed with PTSD herself. In 2014, she decided to quit her job in Intel, and she created a new platform in Sha'ar HaNegev for kids with PTSD. She treated them throughout. And a few months before October 7th, she called all the kids in Kibbutz Kfar Aza and said, bring over your old toys. And she drew the wing of hope in one of the mobile shelters. They all glued the different toys together. And this symbol was left in Kfar Aza when the entire community was evacuated. Now Adi, Livnat's sister, after the huge tragedy, called all the communities in Israel to create these wings of hope. And now when you travel in Israel, and in fact in many different communities around the world, you can see the wings of hope that Livnat left us. I also want to share the story of Irene Shavit and her boyfriend Netta. They too lived in Kfar Aza. Irene and Netta that morning went into the safe room in their own house. They heard the shouting in Arabic, they understood what was going on, and they locked the door in the safe room. Throughout the day, terrorists started to open the door, tried to open the door. Netta was fighting over the door and managed to rescue them a few times. The last time, he did not. The door was open, a grenade was thrown into the safe room, and Netta did the only thing he could do. He jumped on the grenade in order to save his girlfriend, Irene. Irene was left in the safe rooms for several more hours until she was rescued, with the dead body of Netta and with their wedding gown in the closet in the same room. I met Irene a few weeks after October 7th, and she said, "Netta was the funniest person ever. We used to joke around, we used to tell jokes, and I promised myself, I won't be a sad person. I will celebrate life for Netta." 3 days ago, I've been texting with Irene, asking her permission to tell her story when I'm in Copenhagen, and she said, "Yael, you know where I am now? I'm in Machu Picchu." And she sent me the photo saying, "I'm celebrating life, as I promised."
Now they block the roads. They're stuck in Machu Picchu.
So that's a story of Irene Shavit. Irene will soon be a student at the Reichman University. She decided to major in terror. Sion Ben-Hanan is a very good friend of mine. He's the security officer of IBIM, one of our absorption centers for Ethiopian Olim in Shar HaNegev. That morning, he wasn't just the security officer of IBIM. One of the other security officers was in Thailand, and he said, "Can you please cover for me Moshav Yachini?" Moshav Yachini was attacked by Hamas that morning, and Sion rushed into the Moshav, an 18-year-old boy died in his arms that day. And when he returned from Moshav Yachini, all his friends were at the security group of Kibbutz Shar HaNegev, Kibbutz Kfar Aza. He was among the first people to enter Kibbutz Kfar Aza and to find Ophir Liebstein, the mayor of Shar HaNegev, who was assassinated that morning. The sights that Sion saw that morning are horrific. He never shared it with me. He said that no one should not just see them, but hear about what he saw. Thank God, a few weeks after, then he realized that he was not okay. He was seeking for support. He was diagnosed with PTSD, and he's taking care of himself ever since then. It's a long journey. A few months after October 7th, Talia and I met a Danish donor in the southern part of Israel. We met Sion, and he was supposed to tell his story to the Danish donor. I came earlier and had a chit-chat with Sion. And he's like 2 meters high, very strong guy. And I asked him, "Sion, what is your dream?" And he said, "You will make fun of me, but I have a dream for many years now, to play the saxophone." And Talia is a magician, and the amazing Danish donor, in a week, Sion had a saxophone. And although he's struggling, he's now playing the saxophone and fulfilling his dream. I mentioned that morning the family, or my family, was, sorry, my family had some idea what the families of the hostages are anticipating. But two of my colleagues were in that same situation. Tali, my friend, her mother-in-law, Ophelia, 75 years old, was taken from Nir Oz, and Dalia Kushner, my good friend, two of her brothers-in-laws were taken from Nir Oz. Yair and Eitan Horn immigrated to Israel from Argentina as teenagers. They both were educators working with youth at risk. They were taken immediately to the tunnels when Eitan was suffering from a severe physical condition even before October 7th. But they had each other, and they supported each other. One day, the terrorist guard comes to Yair and says, "You're about to be released." He struggled, didn't want to leave Eitan behind, but he had to go. Imagine a brother leaving his younger, sick brother in the tunnels. Two other sets of brothers are still in the tunnels of Gaza. the Cunha brothers and the Berman brothers, and Yair is still struggling to release Eitan. Last Shabbat, Yair was brave enough to stand in front of a large audience, and he said that. Yesterday at 1 a.m., there was a massive explosion, very strong. I don't know what it was, whether they brought down a high-rise building or a tunnel, but I woke up and the first thought that crossed my mind was, I just hope my brother is okay. We've been living in this nightmare since October 7th, and the nightmare hasn't ended. It feels to me like nobody cares. And as I'm doing for every night since I came to Denmark, and it was last Friday, when I finished this lecture, I called Dalia, my friend, and I said, I met another 50 people who cares about you, and you are not alone. And I'm texting her every day, and she said, tell this amazing audience, thank you. 48 brothers and sisters of ours are still in Gaza, among them in Bar Hayman. In Bar Hayman was at the Nova Festival, was shot and was taken to Gaza. Her face was hanged very closely to October 7th on one of the bridges outside of my neighborhood. So every day when I went to work, I saw her face. And from the very first day, I told myself, I know this girl from somewhere. I never met in Bar Hayman, but it took me 5 months to realize that her mother grew just next to me when we were young kids. Next door, the next door neighbor. And she looks just like her mother when we were young. Everything is personal in Israel. You know everyone. Everyone was impacted. There is no one single family in Israel that wasn't affected by October 7th. But I want to share with you that the Fund for Victims of Terror supports not just Israeli citizens, but all the foreign nationalities that were impacted. Among them is the family of Joshua Mulel. Joshua was a 24-year-old student, came to Israel from Tanzania to study agriculture, was shot dead and taken to Gaza. His mother passed 5 years before, and his father was left to take care of his 4 siblings in a village in Tanzania. I don't know if he even knows where the Gazan border is, but Joshua was the future of the family. He was supposed to go and come back to Tanzania and earn a living for the family. I made it my business to call Joshua's father every month and ask him how he is. This is how we do with all the families from the Philippines, from Thailand, from Sri Lanka, from Canada, and all over the world. The Fund for the Victims of Terror is part of Tikkun Olam. We are there for everyone, Arab, Jewish, in Israel, and outside of Israel. And this is what we've done for the past 22 years, and this is what we are doing since October 7th. We were a team of 3 on October 7th. We are now a team of 29. We will be there to support the families, those who left Israel, those who stayed in Israel, and thanks to the support of the Jewish communities around the world in Keren HaYesod, we are here for them, we see them, and they feel like they are being seen. I want to thank you all for your support and for coming here tonight, and I will call Dalia today and tell her that I met some more people and that they are not alone. Thank you.
Also, thank you to the ambassador for his greetings, and Talia for your story about also the personal touch to the situation. I think it was very emotional, but also very frank and very direct, which I personally appreciate. And like you say, that you feel the support from us, we appreciate that. I mean, we are far away, and many of us feel it in different ways. So some of us struggle more than others, but we try to support you, and also, therefore also be happy to know that you appreciate it the way you do. And then I will give the word to Ole Constantino from the office, who will say a few words in Danish, about how you can support the victims of terror funds and how you can support Keren Ayesot in Denmark in general. And also already now, a big thank you to all of you who are already supporting us.
Det gjorde det sådan. Ja, jeg fortsætter i dansk, og jeg håber, I kan høre det. Jeg ved godt, det har været lidt dårlige lydforhold, men det er sådan, betingelserne er lige herinde. Jeg er som sagt på kontoret i Keren Ayesot, den danske Israel-indsamling, og der vil jeg lige fortælle bare en lille smule om, hvad det er for en organisation, vi er set her i Danmark. Vi har nogle faste projekter, som vi støtter meget, og nogle af dem har vi hørt en del om i dag. Det er selvfølgelig Victims of Terror-fonden, hvor Jael hun kommer fra. Og så er der også et projekt, der hedder Communities Together. Communities talte Taliaren, og det er, hvor vi skal prøve at genetablere den mentale tilstand i de sydlige byer, kibbutzer, der blev ødelagt. Det er faktisk sådan, at folk de ikke er så interesseret i genbosættelser. Så der er lavet nogle forskellige programmer til at gøre det sådan, at de kan føle sig trygge og gerne vil bo dernede. Og det er et projekt, som vi efter 7. oktober tog op her i Danmark, for at være sikker på, at vores danske støtter og bidragsydere også kunne støtte den, det projekt. Så er der også, som Talia hun nævnte, Aliyah, altså dem, som ønsker at emigrere til Israel. Det er jo ret vigtigt, at der hele tiden er nogen, der bosætter sig i Israel, så at det kan holde sig sin befolkning fin og flot. Og det støtter vi også her fra Danmark som et projekt. Og så er der egentlig Terroroffer-fonden, den har I hørt rigeligt om. Der er lige det, at vi har haft nogle særlige gode resultater her på det seneste med at udbyde nogle muligheder, specielt til folk, som har haft et ønske om for eksempel at støtte et mobilt beskyttelsesrum. Så det er en mulighed. Amigur, det er omkring små 60 ældreboliger til blandt andet holocaust-overlevere, der ligger spredt over hele Israel. Amigur, det er sådan et bofællesskab nærmest, men hvor man så også får en del støtte. Vi har haft stor held med, at der er mange her i Danmark, der har støttet med at sende en pakke i forhold til i højtiderne. For eksempel en Pesach-pakke, eller nu her om lidt har vi spurgt, om der var nogen, der vil lave en Rosh Hashanah-pakke. Så det har vi også kunne sende ned til dem, og det bliver de rigtig glade for, fordi det er noget, der kommer ligesom oven i alt det, som er det daglige, og med til at gøre det til et værdigt ældreliv. Youth Futures har også været berørt lidt i grundlæggende, så er det så, at der er nogle børn i Israel, som ikke har det godt i hjemmet af forskellige grunde. Det, der er den store succes ved Youth Futures, det er, at man stiller en mentor til rådighed, som ikke er en fra familien, til hver eneste barn. Og det er bare noget, der giver rigtig gode resultater. Og så kan man sige, at det er vigtigt. Jeg synes i hvert fald, at det er ret vigtigt, hvis man kigger på sin egen familie, ens børn, hvis de ikke trives og ikke har det godt. Hvad ender det med, de at blive som voksne? Ikke særlig gode. Derfor så er det et ret vigtigt projekt at investere i fremtiden. Det her. Endelig har vi et IT-projekt, specielt til unge, som skal have forbedret sine IT-kundskaber. Det er sådan også, at man kan abonnere på vores nyhedsbrev. Jeg ved, der er mange af jer, der gør det, men hvis der er nogen af jer, der har lyst til det, det er helt gratis. Det kommer sådan cirka 10 gange om året, og der kan I få noget at vide om, hvad det er for nogle projekter, vi laver. I kan også blive inviteret til sådan nogle begivenheder som de her, så det er en oplagt. Så hvis der er nogen, der har lyst til at abonnere på det, så kan man bare scanne QR-koden der, nu er den måske lidt langt væk, eller man kan gøre det ude på skiltet ud, og så kan man modtage vores nyhedsbrev. Man kan også afmelde det igen. Man kan også blive medlem af vores forening. Det koster 150 kroner per år. Og med i prisen, så får I det blad, som jeg har lagt rundt. Det er den nye udgave af Magtbit Nyt, som er vores blad, som fortæller noget fra de projekter, vi har. Og det udkommer faktisk først på søndag, men vi havde lavet det sådan lidt hurtigere, så I kunne få det med hjem, hvis I vil have det. Så I tager det bare med hjem. Endelig så har man mulighed for at støtte med nogle bidrag, der vi er inde på tidligere. Og der kan man gøre det igennem vores hjemmeside, hvor man kan skrive sig op. Der er mange, der har gjort, at de siger, at jeg vil godt give 50 kroner om måneden. Så kører det helt automatisk gennem MobilePay eller med betalingsservice eller hvad det skal være. Så det er en ret smart facilitet, og så kan man være med til at støtte vores arbejde på den måde. Man kan også give det et bidrag fra et enkelt, det er vi selvfølgelig også glade for. Og når man gør det ind igennem vores hjemmeside, så får man altså også skattefradrag, så det kan være, det måske er attraktivt. Endelig vil jeg godt lige fortælle os og reklamere lidt for, at man kan støtte Israels, vores arbejde i Israel ved at nævne os i vores testamente. Det kan være, at man synes, at man har en lille del af ens arv, hvor man kan gå til et testamente. Eller det kan være, at man vælger at testamentere under det, der hedder 30-70-reglen. 30-70-reglen, den er interessant for dem, som ikke har nogen direkte arvinge. Det vil sige, hvis man ikke har et barn eller en forældre, så kan man gøre sådan, at den, man godt vil have, skal arve sig, kan få en større arv ved at lade os tage nogle af afgifterne. Det lyder som sjovt, men hvis det er noget, der har jeres interesse, så vil jeg anbefale, at I lige ser på vores regnestykke, der står inde i, det kan jeg ikke redegøre for her. Det er lidt kompliceret, men vi har et regnestykke inde i brochuren, hvor der står om, hvordan det er. Og det, der er det, måske også lidt interessante, det er, at vi sørger for at betale omkostningerne til advokat og, det, og til tinglysning. Så hvis der er, der er nogen, der har overvejelser, så er I meget velkommen til at kontakte mig på kontoret, og så kan vi sammen finde en af de advokater, vi arbejder med, eller jeres egen advokat, og så kan vi få lavet det testamente. Endelig så vil jeg bare lige gøre endnu en gang reklame for, at man kan blive medlem. Det er det ene sted. Og man kan give bidrag. Det er næsten ikke til at se, fordi det er også. Så hvis I vil godt give et bidrag, så skal I gå herover, så kan I se koden. Det var det, jeg skulle sige her i dag til jer. Og jeg var meget glad for at se så mange alligevel. Tak.
Tak, Jonas. Go back to English. Thank you very much for coming. As some of you noticed when you came, there are a lot of other things going on, so that's why we were allowed to use the synagogue, which means this is it. But if you want to come up and say hello to Talia or Ael, that's quite okay. So you come up and hilse på dem, hvis I vil. And I'll just say in Danish our next event. Vi har den 6. november, og der kommer information om det i vores nyhedsbrev, hvor vi får en, der hedder Doron Gavish fra Israel til at komme, og han var med til at opbygge og installere hele der Iron Dome, altså det her missilforsvarssystem. Så han kommer og taler blandt andet om det, og det kommer til at foregå, som de har gjort før, inden ved siden af i festlokalet, med også noget at drikke til efter osv. Men igen, stort tak for, at vi kom, og et stort tak for støtte, og til dem af jer, der fejrer helligdag næste uge, så allerede nu et Shanat Tova, Umetuka, Gemachat Umat Tova. Og alt til jer, alle andre, var tak fordi I kom på godt gensyn.
Two, three, and...
Bashana haba.
Bashana haba. נשב על המרפסת ונזכור ציפורים נודדות ילדים בחופשה ישחקו תופסת בין הבית לבין השדות עוד תראה כמה טוב יהיה בשנה הבאה
Soon the day will arrive when we will we'll sing together and the distance will just disappear.
And the children will smile in a world that's gotten better. So let's bring in a healthy new year. Wait and see what a world there can be. And we know that there's always tomorrow.
Oh, tire,
come up to me, yeah. Bashana, bashana.
Dahim mulha or hanigar halava. Anafa levana
tiflaska or knafahim vehashemesh tizraf betocha.
Hej Abraham. Vi står her lige foran en fantastisk nim, persisk inspireret bygning, som lyser med millioner af pærer. Det hele er ligesom at være i et lille paradis. Og vi står foran de fantastiske blomster, som tilhører den her festival. Blomster. Og der er sommerfugle, og der er bobler, som kommer op fra jorden. Og der er pink og lyserød og lilla og gul og hvid, og der er ikke den farve, der ikke er her. Og vi står foran de mest fantastiske dahlier, som er vidunderlige. Man skulle ikke tro, at nogen at dahlia kan gro i Danmark med sådan en størrelse. Det er jo børnehoveder. Det er fantastisk. Men nu går vi videre til...
Og så har vi musikken fra...
Og vi har musikken fra Pantomime Teatret, ja. Det er meget festligt. Jeg skal lige vise noget, som... Når jeg kommer her og ser denne her busk, som vi lige er på vej til, den er en jerneurt, hedder den. Og den er meget udbredt i Israel. Når jeg kommer forbi den, og det gør jeg jo hvert år, så minder den om den lille have foran vores bygning i Tel Aviv. Fordi den er jeg vokset op med. Så den er meget smuk og meget fantastisk. Og den er jo kæmpe stor her.
Så de vokser sådan?
De er kæmpe store. Det er fantastisk.
Der er nogle gode håndværker her.
Der er nogle fantastiske gartner her. Den er virkelig en verdensklasse gartner. Eller gartnerier, fordi det er...
Oligarker.
Nå, men nu går vi forbi den store scene, fordi vi skal bare videre og se på blomster. Og der går vi skråt over for fra Nim. Og så er vi gået lidt længere, og vi er kommet til sådan et stykke foran koncertsalen. Og her er der altså også nogle interessante opstillinger af blomster midt i søen. Der er sådan tre bassiner med, to bassiner med vand. Og der er lavet en krans i blå, mørkeblå og lyseblå blomster. Helt utroligt smukt. Og lige ved siden af, på begge sider af den, af denne her enorme krans, som står i vandet, så er der to buske med det, der hedder engeltrompetbuske. Og så ved siden af nogle bougainvillea. Og de der bougainvillea, de er rigtig store, og de er ligesom de udgør til sammen en meget smuk farvepalet. Altså lilla bougainvillea og hvide engletrompetbuske og det blå midt i vandet. Smuk, smuk komposition.
Det eneste, der mangler, det er solen.
Sagde jeg ikke bare?
Jo, han siger ikke.
Nu står vi et sted, hvor der er en utrolig kulisse foran os. På baggrund er der rådhusets tårn. Lige foran, og til venstre. Nu står vi foran den mest fantastiske smukke kulisse. Foran os, foran den sø, som vi står foran, der er rådhusets smukke tårn, man kan se på. Og til venstre er det så H.C. Andersens slot, som man kalder. Til højre har vi så St. George's skib, som er en replika af en næsten af et sørøverskib. Og foran ligger så et lille bitte hus, som er ændernes hus. Og vi kan også godt se et lille ande, som er på vej til at svømme hen over her til deres lille hus. Så nu er vi ved det område i Tivoli, som er opdelt i nogle øer med planter i. Og jeg har slæbt Abraham med til det her sted, fordi det er et på en måde også et historisk interessant sted. Der er en del 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, cirka 12 kar, hvor der er vand i. Og det er sådan en lille bitte springvand. Og en gang var de grå. Jeg kan se, at de her er malet i andre farver. Folk tror, at det er lavet af beton, det er det ikke. Det er lavet af træ. Og det er fra under 2. verdenskrig, hvor der ikke, man kunne ikke få fat i cement. Og derfor så fandt arkitekterne, som arbejdede her i haven, ligesom der er masser af arkitekter, der arbejder for Tivoli. De fandt på at lave det af træ, og så lave en ligesom et snydebillede af noget, der ligner beton, betonkar. Men det er faktisk træ, og det har holdt siden hen. Man kan høre det, når vi banker, at det ikke er beton, det er træ. Men her er nogle smukke blomster. Kom, Abraham. Det er den del, hvor der er også krysantemum og dahliaer i lange strømmer, altså virkelig. Nu står vi lige foran de gule. De er meget smukke og store. Og her er de mørkerøde. Nogle er små, og nogle de udvikler sig. Og det er meget interessant at se den der cyklus, de har, hvordan de udvikler sig. Fra sådan en lille knop, og så bliver det til et kæmpe hoved bagefter. Og her har vi noget mynte. Det er smukt, meget smukt komponeret, hvor man blander staude blomster med de her kompositioner af krysantemum og dahliaer. Der er hoster. Der er en hel masse hosterblade rundt omkring i de områder, vi går forbi. Store og små hoster. Og det her, ja, det her. Og den store hoster der, det er en kæmpe, kæmpe hoster. Hoster er en meget, meget varieret plante. Og her kommer vi forbi noget, der ligner sådan et paradisæbler. Og her er det kæmpe hosterblade og hvide skovridder. Og lilla skovridder. Og mørkerøde, næsten vinfarvede, store, flotte dahlia. helt vidunderligt at se på. Men jeg synes, at i år har de bestræbt sig på at blande noget, der er sådan lidt som om det var i naturen vildt og noget kultur. Så det er sådan et ny approach til at vise blomster og at lave en planteplan. Og her er de gule dahlier, som ligner næsten en lille smule krysantemum. Og det, som jeg elsker her i denne her have, det er de der meget, meget, meget store piletræer. Og når det er juletid, så er de fyldt med nogle julebelysning. Og der står jeg altså og ikke kan lysrøve mig fra sådan et syn, hvor de her enormt store træer, det er sådan ligesom at komme ind under et eventyrtræ. Og når man går her i det her område, så kan man ikke lade være med at også lytte til det vand, der kommer op af de her bassiner. Jeg skal lige hen til den der orange dahlia, fordi jeg er helt vild med den. Se, der er nogle gule blade, lyse gule blade til som baggrund for den ind i blomsten, og så bliver den mørkere og mørkere, indtil den kommer ind i, vi kommer ind i midten af blomsten, så er den ligesom blodfarven nærmest. Og det lyser op. Man behøver slet ikke noget belysning her nærmest. Og så står den lige foran en sommerfuglbusk. Og disse lilla farver og den orange her, og den der meget smukke lille blomst her, en orkeleje-agtig blomst, og lidt orange og lidt hvidt. Altså de kompositioner, det er jo fantastiske. Ja.
The last days of Lulu, somewhere in a shoe, a hacid acid Jew, why so sad on your stool? The other sighs deeply with a heavy heart. Judgment Day is coming, it soon will start.
And why do you dance around with a smile so wide?
Why so happy? I ask you if you don't mind.
I feel my king, our judge, the king of the world. He is my and your father, haven't you heard? So to Rosh Hashanah, let's say Lechaim. Let's hear the shofar, let's trust Shammai. Shana Tova Umetuka, let the blessings flow. May we be judged well, let the love just grow.
With honey on apples and laughter in the air, we gather together in the trust we share. A little joke here, good wishes there. Love and trust surround us like a sweet prayer.
And why do you dance around with a smile so wide?
Why so happy? I ask you if you don't mind.
Avinu Malkeinu, our judge, the king of the world. He is my and your father, haven't you heard? So to Rosh Hashanah, let's say Lechaim. Let's hear the shofar, let's trust Shammai. In 5785, let the blessings flow. May we be judged well, let the love just grow.
Avinu Malkeinu, our Father, our King. In this joyous season, together we sing. With trust in our hearts and laughter all around. On Judgment Day, it's our Father's love we found. So to Rosh Hashanah, let's say Lechaim. Let's hear the shofar, let's trust Shammai.
Shana Tova Umetuka, let the blessings flow.
May we be judged well, let the love just grow.
Shana Tova Umetuka, let
the blessings flow. May we be judged well, let the love just grow. Let's hear the shofar, let's trust Shabbaim. So to Rosh Hashanah, let's say Lechaim.
Turn yourself around, the world is spinning. Feel the magic of a new day. Open your heart to a fresh start, send your fears away. You've made mistakes, you feel it. You got what it takes, believe it. Any wrong can be made right, just forgive me, you need not fight. Shana tova umetuka, it's Rosh Hashanah.
Shana na 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 tova umetuka.
Rosh Hashanah.
So many new hopes waiting to find you. Open your eyes, the dreams you prize are all around you. The smiles are hiding, no use in guessing. Make up your mind, go out and find life's simple blessings. This is your time, you feel it. How sweet it is. Shoshana
Shana na 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 Toba ume ume tuka. Dip your apple in the honey on Rosh Hashanah. Shana na 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 Toba ume ume tuka. Hear the sounds of jubilation.
This is Rosh Hashanah.
Yehi ratzon shen yele Rosh lo zana. Sweet in life for those around us with joy and love.
Avinu Malkeinu.
Shana na 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 tov.
Rosh Hashanah.
Sure.
Give us life, Lord, and sustain us. Oh, deliver us to salvation.
Sure.
Give us life, Lord, and sustain us. Oh, deliver us to salvation.
In this new year,
oh, Rosh Hashanah,
make your loved ones smile.
It's Rosh Hashanah.
Open your hearts to one another.
Rosh Hashanah, Simcha, Verina.